Blog Talk Radio.
Occupy Underground Radio, episode 26. How's everybody doing tonight? I got Bud Smith with me. How you doing, Bud?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How you doing over there?
Not too bad. How's New York treating you?
It's going good. I'm actually down at the beach this weekend, or last beach weekend of the summer. And everything's going good. I was going to call in into the show, and I have the I got the number already in my phone from way back in the day when Frankie Metro used to have he had a really cool show in here with Duombo Flamingo called Meth Lab. So in my phone the number is coming up as Meth Lab. I'm like, awesome.
That's fucking cool. Speaking of that, I think that was part of why they chose to name that big event last November, Methpocalypse. And we're doing that again this year. Are you coming? Can you come out to Albuquerque in November, Bud? What do you got going on?
I'm supposed to be going to Africa with my wife. We're supposed to go check that out. So in November, I don't think I'm going to be going anywhere else but there.
That does sound slightly more fun than what we're doing.
Yeah, get out of town.
Yeah, you know, Africa. Well, normally we've got Corey James Taylor and Mary Stockton. Mary tends to be fashionably late sometimes. She'll probably be calling in here in a minute. Corey, in fact, there she is, speak of the devil. Corey called me just before the show, and he's not going to be joining us tonight. Hey, Mary, how you doing?
Oh, Corey's not coming. Corey's not going to be here tonight.
Corey's not going to be here tonight.
Okay.
But we got Bud Smith.
Hey, Bud.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good.
I heard you got a new book out. Well, I've seen it on Facebook. I don't hear. I see on Facebook all this stuff. I don't hear anymore. Like, oh, you know, so-and-so called me. No, it's like, I've seen it on Facebook.
Yeah. And you hear, like, conversations with people who were like, hey, I saw shit on Facebook behind you at a restaurant or on the beach or whatever, and it's like, everywhere you go, it's just old people conversations.
Oh, can you believe what the fuck I saw on Facebook?
I know, right?
Plague of locusts.
It is amazing. It's like just the effect that it has on people, too. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. Like, they've shown studies that it affects your endorphin level, like when somebody pokes you on Facebook, you know, like little things like that. People go into big fits of depression. People stop being friends with each other in real life over, like, people not liking comments or posts on Facebook. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it's because, like, whenever somebody likes something, it gives you the aha endorphin rush, and, like, so you start, like, building the pathway. So every time, you know, you post something, oh, let me refresh. Oh, somebody else liked it. And so it does. It gives you a high, and you do become addicted.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not. So, I haven't really been on Facebook at all. Last week.
There's another thing I keep seeing on Facebook, and I've been wanting to ask you about Uno Kudo. Tell me about that.
Yes. Okay. So there's a few projects that all came to a head at about the same time. Uno Kudo is one of them. That, you know, currently it's like a yearly anthology that I do with my good friend Aaron Dietz. The author is super, and he's got a couple really great projects going on this year. So me and him right now are editing the writing for it with Erin McParland. She's the art director, so she gathers all the art for it, and she tends to commission things from established artists, and me and Aaron kind of try to get as many great writers to submit as we can. We put together a yearly anthology, and we release it, and it raises, you know, some money for charity. Last year we did one for Penn International, and it was pretty great. You know, just getting people involved and just seeing that they can, you know, do something good. So that's what Uno Kudo is. It's an art meets lit anthology, and it's coming out with its third issue in a few weeks.
And I know from experience, everything that I've seen that you put out looks fantastic. You put a lot of effort into the design because Frankie's got a couple of your books on the shelf downstairs that I've checked out, you know, and stuff. And I'm always really impressed with everything. I think that's cool. Anything with a compilation together. And then I know there's the Tall Booth, which is that's an actual novel that you wrote, right?
Yeah, Tollbooth just came out. I'm doing a lot of readings for it. There's a few release parties for it coming up in the city and in New Jersey. And that's a novel I wrote, and that's like the current thing. I'm really just excited to kind of get out there. It's a novel about a tollbooth operator. It's told from his point of view, and he's in New Jersey, and he's basically losing it. You know, he's had a mental snap, and he becomes fixated on this young girl who works at the copy center at the local office superstore, and he just pursuing her, even though he's married and his wife's pregnant, and everything's coming to a head all at once, while he's getting tangled up with a young kid who's an anarchist who wants to start his own club.
Damn it!
It's just a lot of fun, I think. You know.
That sounds awesome and intriguing.
That sounds like a good novel.
Yeah, I want to check that out. Now, where do people go to get everything? You know, the Toll Booth, the Uno Kudo, and also the First Time, which is the other anthology that just came out that I'm in. So I'm pretty excited about that one. It's all people telling stories of how they lost their virginity.
Well, I mean, first of all, you guys. I have a website, budsmithwrites.com, just B-U-D-S-M-I-T-H-W-R-I-T-E-S, Facebook.com, and on there, there's links to all the books. They're all searchable on Amazon, but I've been mailing out copies for, you know, as much as I can here of Tollbooth. I love mailing them out myself, because you get to stick some copies of some local New Jersey zines in here from the Idiom, and stuff I get from Michelle McDaniel from the Literary Underground. There's some great underground literature. Just kind of pop it in there for free, so people kind of get a great little sampling of what's going on underground writing in a physical form, you know. And all the other books you can definitely check out on Amazon. They're all Kindle books too. Got a short story collection or something like that. That's Kindle, and it's on Amazon print. Tollbooth, same thing. The first time anthology, I'm working on the digital versions of that. It's a lot more complex because I did a lot of illustrations for it too. I actually drew a lot of illustrations for it, and it's taken a little while to get the files formatted correctly. That's the thing with Kindle, you know, you have to. If you're into it, it's cool. If you're not, it seems lame. But the whole thing about doing it is you have to have it formatted correctly, or it comes out all jumbled. You can't just click that button, publish on Kindle, and have it come out good. It's got to be, the file's got to be set up correctly, and it takes a little bit of effort. So that's the challenge.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I got to say, I'm really excited to see that. I know when I was looking at the back cover online, there's a lot of really good writers in there. I think I saw Aurora Kilpoet in there, and Jason Neese. And was Lynn Alexander in there?
Yeah, Lynn Alexander is in here. I put out a call for submissions, but you know, the thing about putting an anthology out is, you know, you can put a call for submissions, you can do all that, but really, I mean, it comes down to sending emails out to people who, you know, commissioning a lot of work, trying to get people who you really love all together, because that's when it all becomes cool. It all has this tone to it. I mean, you'll get surprised by the random submissions that come in, you know, different stuff, you know, people you never knew about, but getting people you really respect together, that's really where it comes together, and the tone just kind of gets set. And this collection, it's an anthology for people who don't know. First Time, it's called, and it's an anthology about how 4 dozen writers explaining the intimate details of how they lost their virginity, and they're all different. I would never expect the vast range of different shit that people have gone through. I think people kind of like take it for granted that everybody's story is the same, but this thing proved that wrong to me.
Yeah, no, everybody's lives are completely different, and a lot
Didn't
of it's based
read
on
an
perception.
Excerpt from that, Ben?
I got
the last
I wrote
thing
I,
at Vinny.
Yeah, because I submitted my story and I got it in there. So the story of how I lost my virginity is one of the 48 ones that are in there. And
I read it at the
Vinny's Barbershop. I did. And what's funny is a girl that I went to high school with, Lila Katz, she submitted and she got in there too, which is awesome. From back in Corvallis, Oregon. I'm real excited to read what everybody wrote. You know, I want to read hers. And,
yeah.
And Lynn's of short, of course, and I think actually I've already read. I think Kat Kilpoet sent me hers already, and I read that one. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting it, and I feel really honored to be a part of it. I'm glad that I made it in, and I thank you for putting it together.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, when you put together something like that, you know, a lot of people either they just they couldn't write something, or they didn't get around to it, or they missed a deadline, or it's, things just didn't fit together. And I'm really happy how it came out.
Mary's a perfect example. I told her about it, and she didn't write anything or submit it, and that's her own downfall.
I'm sure
Mary.
There'll be a volume two. I'm sure there will
right.
be. I'll be in that one, okay?
Well, there is actually another anthology coming out. One of the Unokudo peeps proposed a new anthology to me the other day, and this will be like a strictly writing paperback print book that comes out. I'm sure there'll be a Kindle e-book, whatever the fuck, version of it, but it's all about the time that you did too much drugs or you got too drunk. It's be called Too Much.
That's a good one.
Oh, I have a really good one for that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody's got that story. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. That's a great idea.
These things are good, you know? I mean, the thing about, like, people, you know, like, we're kind of on the fence about doing readings and shit like that. And, you know, they say, okay, I'm a writer, but I don't like to read in public. That's when it gets fun. You don't realize until you start doing it. How fun that is, you know. And doing anthologies is a great excuse to have a real big party and get a bunch of people together. We've done it with Unokudo a few times, and down in Brooklyn had a few really great readings. Out in LA, we had a big reading at an art gallery, and it was fantastic. It was so much fun. So,
we did a really good one earlier this month. We put together one over at our buddy Vinny's barbershop, and we had we had poets reading, we had an open mic, we had bands playing, we had we had Chemo, we had Band with No Name, we had Noah Martinez and Leah Giever, we had a barbecue, and it was just a rocking time, you know. I think it's cool to make a fucking party out of it, you know. It's like, especially like when if you've got music or like stand up comics too. It's like the type of people who would be more apt to go see that, you know, than poetry will get down there, and then the people get up at the mic and they start reading. They're like, this is fucking awesome, you know. It's like we had people get up on the open mic. One guy from the barbershop got up and like spit some freestyle rhymes with no, you know, beat behind them. And there was another girl that had seen our flyers somewhere in town and came down and read a couple poems. And I mean, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think you get people together and hanging out, and you drink a little, smoke some weed, and get some music and some literature going, and people have a blast.
I read,
you know,
Ben's poem. I broke my cherry reading Ben's poem that night. What was it, God?
Mary,
We got.
That's right. Mary got up and read in front of people for the first time, and she read one of my poems. I felt honored that she decided to read something of mine. That was really cool. Thank you, Mary. You rock.
It was good. That was actually really good, Ben. Thank you.
I liked your interpretation of it, too, because, like, everybody reads with a different cadence and fits books emphasis in different places, and it's like getting to, when somebody else reads something that you wrote, you get to see a whole different interpretation of it. And I had a blast listening to you read my writing that day.
Oh, I had a blast reading your writing that day.
That brings up a pretty cool point there, though, about having people read your stuff out loud. Because I haven't gone to too many writers' workshops or anything like that, or critique circles, whatever you call them. But I wound up sitting in on a few months ago for the first time. It was really great because the way it worked was you would read your thing out loud, and then you had to hand your piece to a person of the opposite sex to read out loud right after you were done.
That was sweet.
Yeah, and while you read it, everybody listens, and while somebody else reads it, you listen, and then everybody writes their critiques on it, and then they give you the notes on the thing. It was really cool. I enjoy reading
that. That sounds cool.
Yes.
Well, didn't you used to do something with the cold reads where somebody would read somebody else's piece that they'd never read before? I remember having a conversation with you about that.
Yeah. I had a short story read on Nate Towers. He had a podcast called Cold Reads. Maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, that was it. That sounded like such a cool concept to me. You know, somebody else with a totally different take on it, you know, reading it for the very first time, you know, which is basically exactly what Mary did. Yeah, because Mary's like, I want to get up and read. Yeah, Mary did a complete cold read.
And I was like, oh, okay.
She's like, I want to get up and read. And she's like, I don't have anything to read. And I was like, hold on. I looked at my phone. I picked one. And I was like, here you go. Read that, you know. And it was like, she never read it before. And that was really cool. Yeah.
Well, I'm an entertainer, so I can, yeah.
It's cool, man. It's cool reading people's shit out loud. It's cool doing your own stuff. I'm just kind of, lately, I'm just, you know, doing a lot of crap. Once you put a novel out, you gotta like, you don't have to do anything, but it's fun to do all the other things with it. You know, all these trips to the post office. I love mailing people books, and I get there's some weird post office scenarios because I live in the city. I live in Manhattan, and my post office is like a fucking war zone. So just dealing with all that, you know.
Now, let me just ask, since you mail books out personally to people, I mean, do you bother just, would you slap a little autograph on the inside and say, hand mailed by the author, you know?
Yeah, when I first got into doing books and things like that, I really thought it was, I would think it's pretentious, you know, to sign books for people until I started getting emails from so many people who wanted one. And it doesn't mean you're famous or anything. People just, it's personal. You know, I got an email the other day from a girl who's, it's her brother's birthday. He lives in England. And I don't know either of them. She asked me, can I happy birthday, Jeff or Joey or whatever. Forget the kid's name. Oh, not great. But the little thing is, it's just cool, you know. I remember being a little kid and wanting shit like that, you know. So now it's nice. It's nice to kind of be on the other end where I get to personally, you know, connect with people. And like I said, including, I love putting underground writing in the envelopes with the book, you know. Just these print copies of zines and stuff that I love. I'm sharing them, like Martha Grover's. Martha Grover puts out a great zine. Michelle McDaniel stuff, Mark Brunetti's Idiom. Mailing that stuff out. I love that.
It's awesome. And I think, you know, I get the pretentious point of view, like, oh, well, who the fuck am I? But on the other hand, it's like you said, it's not about, you know, the fame or who you are. It's a personal level. So I got this book autographed by the author, you know. I got some comic books that were signed by the comic book creators, you know, and I thought that was fucking awesome. And it's not like anybody's name that they would recognize, but it's just something personal. Mm-hmm.
Something personal for you. It's you know.
Right.
It's a silly thing to think it's for any kind of fame or it's gonna be worth anything. It's personal. I love when I get a record by a band. If I meet the band, if I can get them to sign it, that's great. And tell you what, you know, most of the bands I like are famous. Never will be.
Yeah, we play mostly underground music here, but they're all fucking awesome people, and you know, I like getting. I want their autograph on their stuff, you know. It makes it more personal. And, you know, it's funny, because, like, in music, you've got Reverb Nation and Bandcamp and a lot of these different places where you can put your music up for sale or for download. And then we've had a couple film people on here. We were talking to that. Remember Rose? He was put together the Mind Plate TV. It was a format where, like, indie directors and filmmakers could market and put their stuff up there. What is there, you know, besides, because you mentioned Amazon and Kindle. I mean, really for underground press and for small press, I mean, where do people look to find new stuff? I mean, where do writers really, can they go? Or is it just that there isn't anything really cool for that, or that there's too many that for any of them to be effective?
Well, you know what the thing is, like, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what being a successful writer is, you know, because you're not really going to make a whole lot of money at it, doing this, but you're going to get a lot of things out of it. a lot of things out of it. You can make some money, but you're not really going to clean up. And the goal to pursue a larger publishing house is probably most writers' goal, but for people who are just looking around for things to read and you're trying to figure out what's going on the underground scene, there's a lot of places to look. I mean, Amazon is definitely a great place to look. I know it's the big soulless corporation, but the thing is, I mean, you know, you can get some really great high quality books print on, you know, not print on demand all you want. I'm not saying you are, but I've seen people knocking it recently, and I don't get that because I think we live in a pretty great time right now where a person who wants to be creative can just do it. You're not being really held back. You know, you don't have to invest $8,000 or whatever in a print run of your books and then try to sell 2,000 of them, which good luck doing that. Now you can you can have a single print, one at a time. People can buy them, whatever. But to answer your question, I guess it's like there's Smashwords, which is a pretty cool place. Just ebooks. There's the Amazon Kindle stores. There's the iBook store. All that stuff's digital, and there's so many small presses. There's so many small press websites, and you can read samples. Just to pick a website you really like, underground literature, and you can go on there and read samples and figure out what's up and communicate with your authors yourself. Believe me, there's cool shit happening. You just gotta look. It's like finding a band. Seems, you know, there's how many zillions of bands you don't know about that would be your favorite band if you ever heard of them.
Right.
Right.
A lot.
Yeah, it's just getting out there and looking, and we're definitely living in a point where the viewer, the listener, the reader, they're expanding what they're wanting to check out to beyond the mainstream. People are starting to look more for a broader spectrum in their arts, and this is a great time. You know, we're seeing it in music, we're seeing it in film, and we're seeing it in press too.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something about when technology opens up this much, and you can really do whatever the hell you want. You can put it out. Is it going to be successful? I have no idea what you're doing. If it's going to be successful, that has nothing to do with you. That has to do with a lot of other factors that just coincide. But the good thing is, you know, everybody listening who's an artist and you want to put your shit out, you can. Who fucking cares? You can put your shit out there. You can do whatever you want with it. Maybe some people will connect with it. Maybe no one will. But you'll always have that opportunity these days. And in this time period, put your stuff out there. Nothing's stopping you now.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck yeah. Well, fucking A, thanks, bud, for coming on. And definitely, I think people should check out the Bud Smith Writes, and definitely the Toll Booth, the Uno Kudo, for the first time. And I'm definitely going to come up and with something to submit for the Too Much anthology. I think Mary should too.
Yeah,
I'm definitely looking forward to that. I mean, you guys got any time here? I wanted to read some. I got something I wanted to read from Toll Booth.
Yeah.
Or are we running out of time here? I don't want to.
No, we got plenty. We got 2 hours.
Whole show. 2 hours.
You know, we can do whatever
show.
We want with this show. We don't even have to play music if we don't want to. We can.
It's our show, dude.
But
we can
honestly,
do what the fuck we want.
We figured out that you could call people from the switchboard, and we just prank called people from the show all night.
Oh, that's awesome. I haven't screwed around with any of that yet.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, the only
fantastic
thing is, like, nobody answers their phone anymore, right?
I know.
I phone a friend.
Dude, how many voicemails has Occupy Underground Radio left on us?
We've left so many voicemails. Some crazy voicemails, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was on
I was on
Brian Fugit's show last weekend I came on, and we had prank phone his mom. I got a hold of Brian's mom. Yeah, at like 1 in the morning she answered the phone, and I was trying to sell her septic tank cleaning products. And she was right there with us, man. She didn't buy anything, but oh well.
But she woke up at 1 in the morning and listened to your spiel. And so that's pretty cool. I gotta say, I don't know the woman, but that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, she raised.
I might have gone
she
off
Brian,
on
she's
1 o'clock.
She's gotta be pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
Do you
want to
play
true,
music
very
then
true.
We'll come back to Bud reading, or is Ben are you gonna read right now?
No, because that'll make Bud hang out until we're done with music. Let's just let's let Bud read, and then we'll play music. How's that sound?
All right, it sounds great.
Fantastic.
Thanks, guys. So I want to set this up a little bit. I'm reading from a little bit into the book here. I'm not starting from the beginning or nothing, but it's just Toll Booth. I'm gonna read some of this. This is a novel. It just came out. And like I was saying before, it's told from the first-person point of view of a guy named Jimmy Saar, who's a toll booth worker. He collects coins on the New Jersey Parkway. And this is chapter 153. The way it's set up is all the chapters are exits on the parkway counting down from 172 down to zero. The guy's on a downward spiral. And that's how the chapters go. So this is 153. It's about 50 pages in the book. And this is Jimmy at work talking to his boss, Larry. And so that's how this opens up. Larry wanted to see me in his office, which was fine by me. Usually a trip to Larry's office meant some Girl Scout cookies that his daughter was selling, news on some adjustments to the booths, some state money that was coming in. Something like that. When I opened the door, Larry was sitting at his desk reading a magazine, swimsuit girls kissing deep in tropical water. I sat down, put my feet up on the edge of his desk. He didn't care. How you living, kid? Not as good as you, I said. Debatable, he said, cracking his bubble gum. Look, I need to talk to you about something very important. His eyes narrowed, taking on a newfound sinister look. We've known each other for, what, how long have we worked together? 11 years, I said. This whole time you've been in that same booth and things have gone very smoothly. But now, he nodded, but now somebody has been blowing through your tool lane late at night on Jose's watch. Oh. And he said, I've been notified by the state that the only way to correct the problem is to terminate the individual. Jose? I said. No, the motorist, he said, drumming his fingers on the desk with his free hand like a magic trick. He pulled a silver gleaming gun out of the top drawer and slid it across the desk to me. You ever shoot a gun? I fired a gun once, I confessed, but it was a turkey hunting gun. I shot up a mannequin. He said, you could kill 1,000 turkeys with this. You're the best we've got. I wanted to stand up and back out of the office, but something made me reach for the gun. It seemed to hum with power in my hand, and I recalled all the dreams of cowboys and Indians as a small boy in the field behind my house, where my best friend Ted and I would shoot the neighborhood kids in the blueberry bushes with the sticks. We didn't have rifles and high grains to do the thing right, so we improvised. It felt good to hold the gun, the true glow of death in my hands. The grip was wonderful, and so was the smell of the gun oil. I knew I could shoot a terrorist from 190 yards, the hostage wrapped up in his arms. I could get that terrorist right in the center of his skull. Laser dot aiming device? I didn't need that shit. I was an American. It'll be a lime green Honda Civic, Larry said. The tailpipe will sound like a lawnmower. After your shift is over, come in the break room and take a dinner break. I'll watch the booth personally. Jose won't be coming in tonight. He has the evening off. When you're done eating, come and relieve me in the booth. Understood? Perfectly, I said, sliding the gun in my pocket. That car comes every night between 10 after 10 and 20 after 10. It's been on clockwork schedule every night of the work week for the last 7 months. I nodded, so this was to be the new way. I waited in the booth. It was the same routine at night, but much slower. I looked up at the wall. I hadn't bothered to hang a new certificate up there. It didn't matter. The clock of life ticked down like torture. The gun sat on the little ledge. Every motorist who came to the window could have seen it if they really wanted to, if they stretched. But none of them were real people. They were all just ghosts of the highway, disassociated, in a trance between the streams of opposing headlights that danced over the medium. The moon The moon hung sweatless and cold over the pines, still with humid air. Those people must have felt like the moon as they sped along, the glass of their vehicles making an entirely new universe as they crossed through the space between blinks of millenniums and their god carriages. Their vehicles set themselves apart from the atmosphere of the sphere, where they were said to have lives and rumored to have lives. Where they were said to live and rumored to have lives. Their stereos blocked out useless earthly noise. Their seatbelts cuddled them in immortality. In an eggshell, in a bubble, in a sarcophagus on wheels, driving into a vortex, shifting through a new dimension, ripping a hole in the fabric of the galaxy without even blinking, that'd be nice. The guy in the toll booth breaks that fantasy, stops them like sheep, says, "You are not the moon. You're not the reflection of the moon on the ocean. You're not even a little wave in the water. You're just an asshole citizen. Heed all regulations, slow down, face this toll, or face death." Then, from afar, I heard the distant sound of a lawnmower. There was me, the sheriff, and there was him, the outlaw Indian, who had been scalping all the ladies of misplaced wagon trains. The vehicle soared towards me. I leaned out of the booth ever so slightly, aiming the gun into the oncoming headlights. I squeezed the trigger. The silver pistol recoiled. I laughed wildly, squeezing the trigger again. This time, a wire shot, but the headlight burst. I kept shooting as the green Civic came within the last 50 feet of the toll booth. When the car passed, I spun, squeezing off the final 10 rounds at its taillights. The tires flattened, the back window exploded. Swerving, the driver screamed as chocolate syrup blood sprayed from a hole in his neck. On his radio, someone was singing a very poppy hit song, and he was dying to the rhythm of that song. I watched unbelieving as the car went off the side of the parkway into the darkness of the pines. I tossed the gun in the shadows of the booth, and I counted to 50 in my head, then 150, my heart racing. What then? Out the window, I saw a dim light where the single headlight was reflecting off a pine tree. No one had seen anything. Still, I waited for police silence. Headlights appeared on the highway. I gasped. It was a young man with an older woman. Both looked annoyed. "Dude, how much is this toll?" "$0.35," I said. He handed me a $10 bill and said, "I'm giving you a 10. "I see that." "Well, don't try to be all smart and give me change of a dollar." I wondered if there were any more rounds left in the gun. But nervous, I gave him back the correct change. "Dude," he said, "can I have a receipt?" I handed him the receipt. Up the highway, I saw a road department truck parked beside the car crash in the woods. Two men were setting up flashing lights and road flares. I sat perfectly still, gulping. A few other men came out of the woods carrying a large trash bag. It appeared to be industrial strength. Another series of motorists zoomed through the exact change lane. The road crew loaded the bag into the back of one of the trucks, which left in slow official maneuvers up the highway. A quarter mile up was the road service entrance where the salt and the sand and the plow equipment and the road crew headquarters were located. A few minutes later, a tow truck came, hauling the vehicle out of the woods. The flashers and road cones remained for perhaps 20 minutes, and then those workers slowly packed it all away. In the center of the strange night, they were just trying to kill time until the time clock said they were free men again. I saw a kid in a reflective vest yawning and stretching. It was somewhere close to 3 a.m. At my next designated break, I went into Larry's office. He was still reading the Sexy Chick magazine. "Good work," he said. "Thanks." He smiled. That asshole really had it coming. I put the silver gun on his desk. He smiled again. "You aren't done. There's one more person to take care of who's been dodging the toll." "Who?" "Sarah," he said flatly. "My wife." He tossed me a fresh ammo clip from his filing cabinet. I caught it. There was no sense in denying Larry. "Go home," he said. "Get some sleep. Kill your wife." I nodded. Walking down the hall to the vending machine, where I got myself a payday, I munched on it as I drove my car out of the parking lot, and it was sour-weighted. As I pulled into my driveway, finishing the candy bar, I sighed, thinking that I would be sad when my wife was just a memory. I stepped into the dark house. Sarah snored upstairs. She usually didn't snore. Since she'd become pregnant, she started. I imagined that the baby was a snorer, that it was all its evil gremlin doing. Gun in hand, I crept up the stairs, straightening some of the framed photos as I passed. Our honeymoon photos in Niagara Falls. Beside her bed, I aimed the gun in the darkness, preparing to fire at Sarah, but couldn't. And that's that.
Damn. That's fucking intense, man. That was really cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to reading the rest of that. What's the time frame? When does this take place?
This is early on in the book. This is about 50 pages in.
No, I mean, like, what year does the book take place? The toll, 35 cents. Is that can't act.
Yeah, no, it was right around 2000, the year 2000.
Fucking A.
Between 2000 and maybe, I think this is probably actually like 2003.
Yeah?
This is based on that time period. So there wasn't really EZ-Pass back then. It was mostly manual toll collectors. There was the change baskets. In Jersey, we used to have tokens. You would go up and you would get a big roll of tokens and throw them in. So now the Easy Pass is out. There's very, very few toll collectors nowadays, right? I used to see these people, and I would feel bad for them. It was a miserable job, you know?
But, you know, on the other hand, it's like for a lot of people that was great. My brother Jason used to work in it was a parking garage, you know, so he would stand there and open the gate for people and they'd come and stick my hand of money, you know, basically like a toll booth. But that was like perfect for him, you know. He didn't have a boss breathing down his neck. He could do whatever he wanted in the booth, you know. I don't know. So he's thorough, I suppose. But that was really fucking cool. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a lot. It was really great talking to both of you guys. I enjoy your show.
And I'm really
happy that I was able to come on. I hope that everybody checks out, you know, different crappy books I got floating around.
Say what?
That's awesome.
Say what?
I'm not
crappy. Don't
be crappy. People take themselves too seriously, you know.
Check out Bud Smith on the. Don't they? I mean, I've not ever had the problem making myself the brunt of a joke. I will drive down the road like freaking out to the music just so the people in the car next to me can laugh, you know, because I made their day a little bit better. I think, it's our joy. You should spread positivity in the universe.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Have you seen me on the dance floor?
That guy is fucking
crazy,
dude. And your steering wheel has no place it stays. Your steering wheel, like, moves.
I could totally groove with it. Check out Bud Smith's show, The Unknown Show. It's on Tuesdays, right? Is it still Tuesdays?
Yeah, I do Tuesdays, and usually I'm the one asking people questions. I'm always interested in what the fuck people have going on, and I'm gonna do a show pretty soon. I'm gonna put it together. It's gonna all be people from the First Time Collection. I'm gonna have as many people come on and read from that as possible, and we'll have like a big show with everybody reading about their virginity, who's in the book, and maybe some people want to come on. Maybe some people want to come on and tell their story, even if they're not in the book, you know? That'd be fun.
Hey, maybe you can get Mary to come on and tell her story. What do you think, Mary?
Quite an awesome story. It has to do with Aerosmith and freaking Toy Story. I mean, how great is that
actually,
for the first time?
Yeah, this, you know, why don't you, do you want to tell us your story tonight?
I may.
Yeah? Do you want to play music first and think about it, or...? Do you have to embellish?
I will, because it'll be good practice.
It will.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
It'll be good practice.
All right. Well,
all right,
we should
guys.
Probably
thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me on. I hope you guys have a good rest of your night, okay?
You too,
you
man.
Too.
I appreciate it.
All right. Keep it real. Bye.
All right. You too. All right, so we've got this Enchanted Music Festival thing coming up this weekend at Tao. And so I picked
Enchanted
out...
Enchanted Circle Music Festival. Yes.
Yes, it's 3 days, over
it's
30
like
bands
it's
playing.
Like, it's like the little Woodstock in Tao. Like,
it is.
Year,
it's the little Woodstock in Tao.
It's great.
So
yeah.
if you guys can make it to Tao in the next day...
tomorrow, it starts
two or
tomorrow.
Three. It starts tomorrow, and it's going to rock. But if you can't make it there, we're going to play music from some of the bands that you will hear out there. And I'm going to start it off.
Band with no name. Yay.
Yes, band with no name. Mary's band will be playing there.
Element 37.
And
I
will be playing.
Mondo. Fucking Aviva. 37.
American
Slang.
American yeah,
the Green.
Jaw Branch, Shimani, the Predator Project. There's
oh,
lot,
yeah, dude.
Dude,
okay.
A lot of great
Brothers
bands
gonna
are going to
yeah.
be there.
It's going to be so much fun.
We're going, Mary.
Yeah.
We're going on Saturday.
I am going on. Yeah, we are. Saturday. Well, I have a gig
you have
tomorrow.
To, you,
so I would
you have to
go.
Perform. Right.
Yes,
at
I do.
At First Tiki Lounge tomorrow night, Mary's fan
yeah,
band with
yeah.
the name is playing with some... Sam Ivory, Rob's band, and also with Chemo.
With
Chemo-licious. You're playing with Chemo.
Yeah.
Chemo-licious.
Yeah, Chemo will be there.
Playing
tomorrow
night.
Tomorrow's going to be a good night, yeah. It's Sean's birthday, which is our MC Epic, and it is birthday tomorrow.
Epic Beast
He's getting
birthday,
a little bit older,
Bash.
But he's still a baby. He's still wet behind the ears, so it's going to be great to watch him develop and grow and become older. It's, you know, it's awesome.
That's free. It's tomorrow night at First Tiki Lounge. I have to work at my other job. That it's tomorrow night, and I will be coming down when I get off work, which it should be 11, but I might be able to get out of there early. You guys don't start playing until 11:30, but if I can get out of there early, I will. So, you guys can come down and hang out with Mary and I from Oxford Underground Radio, hanging out at First Tiki
Lounge.
Probably, we'll probably.
And
drink.
They'll be at the Channing Festival
hey,
on Saturday.
Come down and. Come if you listen in to this episode, come down to Burst tomorrow and buy Mary and I a drink.
Be greatly appreciated, except for, you know, I got to know when to hold them because I have a show the next day, too. These double
do,
headers
so.
Are freaking pretty great. And they are actually pretty great, though. I enjoy
Burst
them.
Burst has a lot of cool drinks with rum and fruit, and
Fire.
They've got, like pineapple and fruit sticking out of them with little umbrellas and shit. And that's the type of drinking I like to do. I know
goofy.
A lot of people like, yeah, I like the spooky sweet drinks. Have you seen how I take my coffee? And my God, my Kool-Aid's ridiculous too. You know, you can like
sugar.
Stand a spoon up in the sugar before I stir it.
Yeah, because you're not very sweet. You need all the extra
I'm
food.
Not, so I have to fill myself up with sweetness so I can be sweet to people. That's part of it. Okay. All right, let's play some American Slang. What do you think?
All right, let's do that. Yeah, fucking A, yeah.
Fuck yeah, American Slang.
Yeah,
like, this
American
is this
Slang.
Is an awesome
Romeo,
band.
Jimmy Romeo,
James, 7 Days. You got Ricardo Sanchez on drums. You got Dave
Romeo.
Playing
yeah,
bass. Romeo
Dave.
On
yeah.
sax. I mean, that's just
sax.
A fucking, yeah.
They're fucking
can't
awesome.
Go wrong.
Force. And no, you can't. You cannot go wrong
That's
with
right.
American. I love those guys.
All right, here we go. American Slang.
All right.
3 year old.
Play it, Funky White Boy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Damn, you like where this is going? No, we don't got a map. Destination is their journey. You ain't been here yet. Burned all our sheet music, dumped our books in a volcano. Next thing you heard them chainsaw on the piano. Try to steal our soul, but we hid in the pocket. If the funk's a buffet, we gon' eat till we vomit. Even with no instruments, your hands can keep the timing. Put them both together like you pray at every line. Break something when they kick that ass up like content. Stay under pressure, David Bowie, clean side bit. Just like you like it. Hungry as a hostage. Separate us from the funk and we might get violent as a bob, like furious. It's a funk feeding frenzy. Grab a plate and stand in line. Stand up if you fly. Sit down if you're ugly. Ladies, wave your hands if you got your own money. Hey, and give it up for the fathers, but also for the men smart enough to wear a condom. This is the type of shit that you take home to meet your mama. Something for the youngsters, something for the old timers.
At the Taos Ski Valley in Taos, New Mexico. Over 20 different bands, music, art, culture, and camping make a change with bands like Reviva, Mondo Vibration, Bandwidth, No Name, American Slang, The Rudy Boy Experiment, and many other bands. Get your tickets now at www.enchantedcirclefestival.com or info@enchantedcirclefestival.com. Call for more information at 505-933-9420.
All I see is flame, caught in the crossfire. This shit is hot. All I see is flame, caught in the crossfire. This shit is hot. All I see is flame, caught in the crossfire. This shit is hot. All I see is flame, caught in the crossfire. Gunsling all rapping, always under the gun. Curiously, the fresh tip MC under the sun. I bet 101, we possess the right tactics, all access, and we growing the fastest. So cold, we frosty, so costly, oh my. Don't challenge my team, we
globally recognized. Band with no name, the language is strange. We came to run game, earn respect and fame. Know the name is Epic, dropping gems once again. We those bi-coastal rhyme hopefuls, I'm next to win. The industry's got me at a standstill thinking, what should I do next to make some Abe Lincolns? The daydream sinks in, same place and time. Blinded by the weekend, found myself drinking, sinking into that sound that surrounds me. The only outlet I had was the underground. All I see is flames, caught in the crossfire. Caught in the crossfire. The shit is hot. All I see is flames. Caught in the crossfire. Yeah, the shit is hot. All I see is flames. Caught in the crossfire. Yeah, the shit is hot. Found my way out the fire through the music and the culture. That lifestyle molded that child that would go through those things that I show you in my songs. Truest and I'll prove it that I've been doing this music all along. Been a long time coming. Fire still burns slow and writing these rhymes, cutting samples to earn those superb flows. So let the herb burn. Got you caught in the crossfire. Lesson well learned.
Step up. You ready for the rapture? Curious and focused and equipped for disaster. Processing faster, the master technician. Being an solidified opposition in the system. We different, we must be driven. Our vision to promote the mission from within us. Negative statements relinquished and vanquished. With this eloquent elocution and execution of music.
All I see is flames, caught in the crossfire. The shit is hot. All I see is flames, caught in the crossfire.
We'll be right back.
we're back. That was Mondo Vibrations. And right before them, we had Band With No Name, and we started out with American Slang, and all three of them you can check out at Enchanted Music Festival. And I've got a call, so I'm going to bring them on. 505 area code. Caller, who is this?
Hi, this is Gigi Bella.
Gigi Bella, how the hell are you tonight?
I'm doing quite well, and yourself?
I'm not doing too bad. I'm drinking chocolate milk and smoking marijuana, and it that really helps out my night.
That's a good mix right there. That's a really, like, I'm wishing that I had some of that, but, you know, that's just,
see?
Life sucks.
Yeah. I found, because we've been doing this since February, and I found that it's good to get set for the show, you know, get yourself, like, a healthy supply of, I got food to munch on and chocolate milk. And it's a horrendous occasion, and I'm going to share it with you, because during the last musical break, I went and I refilled my glass of chocolate milk, and I used the last of my Hershey's syrup, and I don't have another bottle in the cupboard, so that could, like, possibly trigger an anxiety attack. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, living in a college dorm room, pretty much that exact anxiety attack happens when you run out of ramen noodles, and it's a weekend, and it's, like, the worst thing ever, because you don't want to get out of bed and go anywhere, and you have no ramen noodles, so it's like, well, I guess I just don't eat then.
That's
just
fucking ridiculous.
Not gonna eat. Either that, or I'm gonna.
I remember.
Oreos.
Yeah, but they're not good without. Well, milk.
Well, I could have milk. I just wouldn't have ramen noodles. Like, you can have Oreos without ramen noodles.
Not without. Yeah. So. I don't know. I remember having ramen noodles at one point. Okay, I'm not going to lie. It was a lot more than one point. At a bunch of different times, I remember having ramen where I just took it out of the package and ran it under warm tap water to make it kind of moist.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
And then you sprinkle the seasoning on top and you eat it like toast.
No, that's grody. That's not toast. That's like, that's like what they make you eat in space. That's nasty.
You think? I wonder what they do eat in space. I've got some pretty cool, like, camping. Yeah, like what I've got for camping, right? Right. The thing that we use, I bet that's it. Yeah, for sure. It's not that fantastic.
Except I wonder if it actually, like, tastes like anything, or if it just tastes like space. Once you're up
there. Well, that's the weird thing. You know, I've got some of those packs. I've got them... with my camping gear, I think I've got, like, some enchiladas and stroganoff and fried rice and a variety of things. And I'm really looking forward to trying them. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I'll take them to this fancy schnazzy 3-day music festival that I'm going to go to for one day. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna be there as well for a day.
Are
actually.
You?
Yes.
What day are you going?
On Sunday, there's actually a few of us poetas who got asked to perform. So I'm going to be there with my teammate, Jessica Helen Lopez, as well as Sara Roman and Jasmine Cuffey. And we're going to perform.
Yeah.
So that's,
do you know what time you guys are performing?
We're going to be on Sunday night, towards the end of the night.
Oh, that blows. See, I was supposed to work on Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, and I told my boss that I wanted Saturday off so I could go up there at least for one night.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to come back on Sunday and work Sunday night. So I think maybe I'm going to ask them on Sunday or tomorrow when I go in if there's any chance that I don't have to be back on Sunday night. Because I'd still have to come back. I wouldn't be able to camp out Sunday night. I'd have to come back, but I could come back late because I have to work the desk at the hostel at 7:30 in the morning. But that's not hard. I mean, I'm like, I can still be up late. I just have to get up and make coffee and check people in and out.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
You have such a hard job, Ben.
I do. I have, like, the hardest job ever.
Your job is so strenuous. You can, like, sit at home and take phone calls.
Honestly, Mary, okay.
I was sitting on the porch the other day, and I'm sitting on, I've got like this wicked front porch. I'm sitting out there in the rocking chair. I'm smoking a bowl on the front porch, watching cars go by on Central. The phone rings, right? It's like the first time that the phone's rang in over an hour. Nobody's come in or through, and I answer it. It's a guy. He asks, how much are your $25 rooms with tax? And I'm like, $26.75. He's like, thank you. I'm like, thank you. And I hung up. And I thought to myself, that's all the work I've done in the last, like, hour and a half. And I did it while sitting on the front porch smoking a bowl, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that sounds like holy moly. Man.
What did you do?
If you ever strain anything, do you just, like, strain your weed or what? Like,
yeah,
I strain my muscles. I strain my pinky trying to smoke this bowl. Holy crap.
I stretched my my back wrong changing the sheets on this bed one time, you know.
Oh, no.
That's only because I was trying to do it one-handed.
Brutal.
I was. So I could smoke a bowl at the same time. Gigi, I gotta tell you, I fucking adore you. Every time I see you perform, I think you're amazing and you're awesome.
I love your dresses and the way you do your hair and everything. Like, I love your presence.
Thank you.
I do. I love your presence.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Especially, like, I think, I don't know, I should have done a fashion blog the whole entire summer, because every time I go and perform as a member of the team, like, the biggest compliment I would always get, it almost kind of... like hurt my feelings a little bit, but it also was awesome at the same time. It's like people would be like, yeah, you're a pretty good poet, but when you show up, like, you're always dressed fucking awesome. And I'm like, man, I should just show up and wear awesome clothes and not even do poetry, because, like, that would be it. That would be the whole thing.
No, it's the whole thing. It's your whole thing.
Because I think you're an amazing poet, and I really enjoy every time I've seen you. And I won the raffle that day, and I got one of the Albuquerque Slam 2013 CDs, and I listened to it, and I think, fuck yeah, we played a couple tracks off it here on the radio show before even.
Oh, awesome! That's
yeah.
Awesome.
And what I really want to do is. Now explain it, because we know that it seems like you and Zach and David and Jessica performed together, like at Blackbird, and then before that at Low Spirits. I mean, are there other people on the Slam team too? How does it work? Are you the four main people?
No. See, the Slam team is made up of the four of us. And the way that actually ended up happening is there's an entire season that you have to compete to be able to qualify for a final stage. So you go to different poetry slams and you have to rack up points. And then basically at the end of the season, the top 10 poets who have the most points get to compete on final stage for a chance to compete at these national competitions. So... the lucky bastards, the four of us, we competed all season and then made it to final stage, and we were the top four people at the end of the night. We basically did a slam off and whooped everybody's ass, and the four of us were the last ones standing. So that's how we came to be the team.
Okay. That's fucking awesome. So then you went to Boston.
Yes.
And who
yes,
did you go up against there?
In Boston, we went up against 72 different teams from all over the nation, as well as, I think, some international teams. I think there was a team from France, and there also might have been a team from England. I'm not entirely sure. But we went up against a few teams in our different separate bouts. So technically, we didn't go up against everyone, but... basically, we went to Boston for the National Poetry Slam, which is really the best poets in the entire nation. And we got selected for these different bouts on different nights. Everybody is guaranteed the first two bouts. So we were guaranteed two nights of being able to read our poetry, and that was about it. And from then on, you can advance to semifinals or final stage at Nationals, which is like the four best teams in the country, which is just absolutely insane.
And we actually managed to make semifinals, which was crazy and insane. The first night that we were there, our team competed, and we actually won our first bout. And it was crazy. It came down to, like, the most insane tiebreaker ever. And for me, I was just, like, shaking the whole entire time because I never thought, you know, something like this would actually happen. And then we got to semifinals, and we got to compete with these really incredible hard-hitter teams. And, you know, when it all came down to it, we went out with a bang. We came in 15th in the country, which is pretty freaking incredible. And we got to go out on our favorite poem, I think, of the entire summer. So overall, it was just a fantastic, amazing experience, and just wonderful working with those guys.
That sounds fucking awesome. That's really
cool. Yeah.
So when you were going up against all these people from different places, I mean, what did you notice as, like, big differences between people's styles and you know, going from place to place? Or did you see a lot of similarities? Did you see things in other people that were like nothing you'd ever seen before? And what was it like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the diversity of work alone was really, I think, very incredible. And I would say probably the most, where I saw that, would definitely have to be in our semifinal bout. Our other two bouts, they were good, but they were kind of evenly matched. The first night we had a bout where we ended up tying with a Portland team, and in that room, they were feeling a lot of, you know, confessional pieces, a lot of really heavy hitting, just stories of the death of parents, or just, you know, hard tales of different people's lives and really personal stuff. So we saw a lot of those on the first night. Then we went into the second night, and that was kind of more our Southwest bout. We were in a big, huge battle with our sister city, which is Slam Nuba, the Denver team, and they always put up incredible, hard-hitting group pieces, which they're just always amazing. And then our semifinal bout was really where we started to see that kind of work that just gives you shivers. I mean, it reminds you exactly why you're doing what you're doing, and it's that moment where you're sitting there and you're like, I don't even care if I win right now because I'm getting to witness this. Like, this is just so incredible. And in that bout, we were up against the New Eurekan Poets Cafe from New York, as well as NYC Urbana from New York. We were also up against the Austin, Texas team, as well as Lawn Gnome from Phoenix, Arizona. And the New York teams were just so, oh my gosh, just polished, beautiful, incredible work, incredible writing. But the difference alone from the New Eurekan Poets Cafe and NYC Urbana was very evident. Nuyo was bringing just a lot of these really cultural, hard-hitting pieces and a lot of group pieces. And Urbana had a little more variety. They had these just really beautifully formed duets, I thought, and overall just solid, amazing writing. But that night, I really, like, my favorite team had to be the Austin team, which was, you know, Austin's kind of known for hipsters a little bit.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of this, you know, off-the-block hipster team, and they come in and they were just like so nice right off the bat, and they got up there and they started doing these like amazing pieces, just, oh, they were incredible. So not only were they just like these super awesome like guys right off the street that you make friends with in line, like they were incredible, and they actually had this duet that I just can't get out of my mind. It was these two guys and they got up there and they did a duet about their bromance. And
oh my God.
It was probably the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like, it was incredible. And they got up there and, you know, they're like calling each other Broby One Kenobi, and like it's
cool.
Pretty fucking awesome. So that, I mean, the work alone was incredible. And then of course just getting to sit there and watch final stage, all these incredible, amazing performers. I mean, I'm so new to all of this still that, like, this, it's just incredible to me, and it makes me want to keep writing, and it's, I am just so lucky to have had the experience. So, yeah, it was pretty diverse across the board. I mean, you could see poems about rape and abortion and people losing their parents at a young age, or, you know, these terrible happenstances, all the way to poems about being in a bromance with your bro. And, of course, the poem that Albuquerque was known for, our meat poem, which we actually got to do. So that was pretty awesome as well.
That is awesome. I would like to have, I want to do a show one of these weeks and have you and Zach and David and Jessica all come on. I think that would be a cool one to hang out with you guys all night.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I love those guys. And I think we definitely, like, you know, you share a hotel room with those people for a week, and after that you're kind of bonded for life in a way.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Pretty awesome.
Definitely. We've had Buddha on the show before, Jessica's husband. You know, he's an awesome guy, too. Yeah.
Oh,
and
Buddha's a bomb. I love Buddha.
Isn't he? Yeah. He's just fucking tight. I remember, I think the first time I met him was at his house, and, like, Nick Fury drugged me over there for some after party, and he was just, like, so open and generous, you know, to, you know, at all. He was just a really cool guy the first time I met him, and Revive is such a fucking awesome band. They're like, they're one of the Albuquerque's very best bands, I would say, for sure, you know.
Totally.
Yeah. In fact, I'm definitely going to play some of them. Should we play a little music and come back? What do you guys think?
Yeah,
sure,
that's good. Do you have some Reviva
right
in there or what?
Let's start off with some Reviva. Cool.
Sounds
let's
good.
Do it. All right, we'll be back in a bit.
All right. Occupy Underground Radio, episode 26. Bam.
That's right.
Aw.
Are we all set to go? You cannot die, Highlander. Unless, of course, your head comes away from your shoulders.
to live our lives in positive ways. We must move on to see brighter days. Ay, ay, ay.
One destiny for all of creation. All of creation. Get that.
Jaw Branch, and before that we had Dan Gardugno, the Glass Man, and a little bit of Band With No Name and some more American slang. We started off with Reviva. Everybody there is going to be at Enchanted Music Festival. Dance bands, music.
Festival, Enchanted Circle Musical Festival, Tower Ski Valley, oh yeah, get you some.
Yeah.
Right. You should have done the commercial. That would have sounded, because like, we played the commercial earlier. That was Nick Fury's voice on there from your band, Band With No Name. I thought that was pretty cool that he made the commercial.
He's been working his ass off the last couple of weeks, like, doing a lot of stuff. So really big props out to Nick out there. Him and, he really has been doing above
him and
beyond.
Him and Epic have been busting ass this week trying to get...
yeah, they have.
Yeah, trying to get shit to
sell.
See,
I had the week off, but I wasn't doing band stuff. But it's all
right.
Understandable.
You were very busy on your own.
Yeah, I was. Yep.
So the you know, we started off with the show with Madonna. Did you notice that, Mary? Like a virgin.
Oh.
I did that.
I was singing along. Oh, are we talking about how we lost our virginity now? Are we getting into that story?
I think we should.
Because
we had Bud on here, and Bud just put that book together the first time where 48 talented, gifted writers, myself included, told our stories of how we lost our virginity. So I just put mine out there, published in a book for the whole world to see. I want to know how you ladies lost your virginity.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I want you to go first.
Oh, God. Okay. It's pretty lame, actually. Like, nothing exciting about it. I don't know.
You can,
like,
embellish if you want.
Yeah,
I can embellish
it. Be the truth.
Oh, I just lie.
Hey.
All over the place.
No, embellishing is different.
See, okay, it's kind of crazy because I'm built up as this, like, person. I don't know, I build myself up as this person in all my poems. I have a lot of, I guess you could say, like, sexy poems. And
yeah.
So I get up there and I'm like, yeah, what you talking about? Like, I'm fierce. And really, in actual reality, my life's not that exciting, but, you know, I can write about it and you know, chalk it up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's all perception, and it's all points of view, and how you create the world we live in by our perceptions of reality. I think it's like, and especially
true.
That's so true in writing and retelling of events, is because you can focus on what you want. You know, you can make it what you
right.
want. You know?
I can focus on the fact that, like, I'm fucking sexy, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what the rest of the world thinks about that.
There you go.
I remember hearing you read a poem about your vagina.
Yes.
Yeah, I did too.
I did do that.
Yeah,
that did happen. That poem, that poem I wrote this summer, and it's actually called Slut, and I wrote it as kind of a female empowerment, you know, very feminist move of me. And really, I just wrote it because my coach, Aaron Cuffey, was like, you know, kind of wanting to see me grow a little bit. And I was the youngest member of the team this year, so I kind of had this unique opportunity to become an adult while also just, like, having fun and doing what I love. And so I wrote that poem, and then I performed it at Blackbird, and he had never heard it. Like, I had never done it for him in rehearsal or, like, anything like that. So the first time he heard it was when I performed it at Blackbird. And it was
awesome.
Like, he was my dad. Like, he was sitting in the front row just blushing and, like, laughing so hard. And it was hilarious because I got off stage and he was like, dude, your poem's fucking awesome. I was like,
oh, that's so cool.
I appreciate it. But anyway, okay, I'm just avoiding my story now.
Right.
So what had happened was I was dating this guy, and he was in a band, and basically the story was that I kind of, like, met him randomly and jumped in a band with him and his five guy friends, and then we magically fell in love. And I went out to Roswell one weekend to visit him because he lived there. And, I went out there, and he was staying in a house with his friends. And, I don't know, like, we were just hanging out. I hadn't seen him in, like, a month. And pretty much, like, I used to be this snobby little prude celibacy girl. And I basically would just march up to people and essentially, like, throw Bibles at them. And I was really mean about it, too. Like, I don't know. Whenever anybody would ask me about anything, I'd just be like, you are a heathen, and you're going to go to the deepest circle of hell because you didn't wait until you had a wedding ring on your finger. And now I kind of, like, sit there and laugh at myself and look at it
right.
and go, wow. I was
Do you think
bitch.
Maybe, did you not masturbate enough? Were you not smoking enough weed? What was the issue?
No, I just fucking, like, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I was just still such a little girl. And I just had, like, I don't know, I didn't date a lot of guys in high school, and I was kind of, like, always that girl who was just, like, friends with the really pretty girls. So there'd be a really
right.
pretty girl, and I'd be, like, her cheesy sidekick, like in all the romantic comedies, you know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride, that whole deal. And
right.
So I had kind of grown up in that mentality. And, like, in high school, I was that geeky girl with glasses and, like, you know, still maturing into my shape and just, you know, just so many awkward things about me. And then I just kind of, I got to college and everybody was like, hey, you're really hot. And I was like, what? What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. And so I just kind of was really closed-minded about, like, everything. And then, you know, the whole deal happened. We got a little freaky, and he is a sweetheart. I really, you know, I'm glad that my first time was with him. And pretty much after that, I was like, dude, this is fucking bomb. Why wasn't I doing this all the time? Why am I stupid? Like, I seriously had a whole day where I was like, oh my God, why am I stupid? And
why wasn't
you know,
I having sex with all these people?
Right. Why wasn't I beat you know? I mean, why wasn't I whoring it up all these years? I would have been so much happier.
This feels really good. And aren't people supposed to make each other happy? I mean, this is just logical.
Honestly, you know, now it's like this thing where I see people walking around and they're all grumpy and, like, you know, having bad days and they're, like, crotchety as shit. And I see them walking around and I'm just like, fuck, get laid. Like, seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
Go buy yourself a candy bar and get laid. Like, that's... You can't not be happy. Like, it's like pizza, okay? Really bad pizza is still pretty good. And really good pizza is fucking awesome. Like,
isn't it?
awesome. So there you go.
Like, even Totino's pizza is pretty good, you know? It's like
exactly.
Like Baggio's and Domino's right there. But still, it's fucking pizza.
they're so nice that you can just go for some fucking Totino's. Like, no joke. You can even do pizza rolls. There's so many options. This world is full of options.
Yeah, I know.
It is.
And
it definitely is.
Are you like Tostino? Yeah, sometimes that's what all it needs. You just need that flavor. You just need that marinara.
I'm a fucking pizza roll, ladies, when you're feeling it. No. Oh, that's hysterical.
Oh, God.
No, I think back to your throwing Bibles at people, Dave. I think demons do attach themselves to people, and they have names like envy and narrow-minded. Yeah, right. But I think there's, you know, some of them are, you know, Christianity is another name of that a lot of demons likes to wear on people. And it's the whole religious aspect. It's nothing what Jesus taught, you know. You shouldn't be throwing Bibles at nobody,
like,
you know.
Honestly, I kind of, okay, here's the thing.
And it makes them,
the
people get
time.
So angry. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I have a hard time because I consider myself to be pretty, like, spiritually in touch with myself. Like, I have my beliefs. I've been raised as a Christian, like, my whole entire life, and that's my belief. That's what I believe in. But I think, like, there's so many things that, like, put people like me in a corner, you know, because honestly, like, I feel like Jesus was so bumfucked in harmony. Like, no joke. Jesus hung out with, like, the lowest of the low kind of people, and Jesus kind of just, like, did whatever he wanted. And I don't think that we would have, like, the ability to get laid in this world. Like, it wouldn't feel good if it wasn't supposed to feel good, you know?
No, the meaning of life is to live, and it's to experience things, and that's really what Jesus taught. I mean, the Gospel of Thomas, which didn't get included in the Bible, talks a lot about his Sermon on the Mountain, and I think that's something everybody should read because it gives you more insight into who Jesus was. And you can find it. It's part of the apocryphic text, I think, but the Council of Nicaea didn't deem it important and stick it in our Bible. Yeah. But Thomas was one of Jesus' apostles, you know, so you would think that it would have made it in there. Anyway, but, you know, he talks about how, about what congregation means, and the concept of an organized religion where anybody stood up on a pulpit and told you, you know, what to think, how to interpret it was disgusting to him. Congregation meant peers talking about their personal beliefs and sharing them together, you know, the way that we do in conversation. And everyone's meant to interpret things differently. We're all supposed to have very vast points of views and interpretations of things, you know. And Jesus isn't the way most Christians don't know a lot about Jesus, I don't think. That's the problem, you know, because their religion doesn't go along with a lot of what he taught, you know, and it's because it's the organized structure of it. You're supposed to be a spiritual person, you know.
Right. Well, and I think, like, sometimes I think life is a little bit like Talladega Nights, and people just sit with their nose in their Bible, and they're like, well, I think my Jesus looks like this, and that doesn't look like your Jesus, so whatever, like, my Jesus is right.
You know?
Yeah, my Jesus is wearing a tuxedo shirt, like, that's just how it is, you know? He wants to be
an alien. He's got like really big eyes, long gray skin, arms, and yeah.
Right. How come your Jesus is black?
Know.
That's not my Jesus. So I'm gonna give you a heads up. Wait, no, my Jesus is what? My Jesus
looks
just like
me. Oh, I bet Jesus is smoking a bowl.
He is.
Oh yeah, he did that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the long Gandalf
totally.
Fight, I communed
yep.
with Jesus, with the bowl. We chill.
I see.
Jesus is, yeah.
I had
a pack
of apples
for the last supper.
Yes. All right, so the live portion of our show is going to wrap up here in a couple minutes, and so the people that are listening live, it'll stop, but it keeps going for us for a while longer. And so the show's going to keep going, and so I urge you, if you're listening live, to check back in like an hour after the show is done, and it goes through its whole processing thing, and it's up there for you to listen to in the archives, and then just jump forward like 2 hours, and then you can finish listening to the rest of the show. Because here in about a minute and a half, a pretentious voice is going to start going off at my ear, telling me to, you 60 seconds. Did you hear the pretentious voice when you called in? Yes, right.
Yes, I heard it.
Yeah, right.
He sounds like a whore.
Blog talk radio.
She is. A blog talk radio is a British whore. She's a pretentious.
She needs to get laid. She needs to get herself a candy bar. And she needs to get herself some pizza.
She needs to get her
pipes
cleaned.
She needs some pizza.
Maybe we should do a Kickstarter for her. We can try to get blog talk radio laid.
She needs
not
some
even
pizza,
feasible.
For sure.
<It's a> pizza. All right, so Mary, I think you should. This is perfect. We have 90 seconds. So if you want to hear how Mary Stockton lost her virginity, and you're listening live, then you have to wait for an hour. You know, make yourself a sandwich, maybe smoke a bowl. And come back and then click on the same link again, and it'll and then you know jump ahead, and you can hear the rest of the show. It's the VIP section, you know, it's the after party.
Yeah, so this is how Mary Stockton lost her virginity.
How Mary Stockton lost her virginity, and I just want to say thank you to all the live listeners. Thanks to Bud Smith for calling in and hanging out with us, and for reading part of Toll Booth. That was really cool, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. Go check out the BudSmithsWrites.com and buy all of his books. Get that first time one in it. I'm in it. Lynn Alexander, Aurora co-poet, my friend Lila from high school. It's full of great people and great stories, so check that shit out for sure. And and fucking A, Gigi, too. Thank you for hanging out with
us
tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Gigi.
Thank
you. You should
call
back in. You should be like a guest that calls in, like, you know, whenever the fuck you want. So there you go.
That's kind of
what I'm saying. Call in anytime you want.
I might just do that, you know, just let me know. College is boring, and I'd love to talk about pizza, so...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, awesome.
All right. Peace out, Akbar Underground Radio. We love you.
Love you. Good night. How Mary lost her virginity.
That's it. Now we are.
Cold December night. It was her freshman year in high school. She had a boyfriend that she had been seeing for 2 months. He was on the basketball team, very athletic. She's from a very small town, so her family knew his family. She'd actually known him since she was like 3 years old. Their parents went to went to school together. You know, it's one of those small town little things. But it was a cold December night, her freshman year of high school, and she told her mom. I told my mom, "Hey, mom, I'm gonna go watch the Toy Story. We're going on a date." And it was when Toy Story first came out. In the theaters, and so we totally didn't go see the Toy Story. We were in his Monte Carlo. It was an 85 SST top, black, the red pinstripe, and we went to a friend's house first, and they had wine coolers and Budweiser, so, like, you know, I drank a couple wine coolers, and anyway, we ended up leaving, and, like, we went and parked, because that's what you do when you're from a small town. I'm sure they do it in the city, too, but when you're from a small town and you live in the middle of nowhere, there's really awesome places to park where the sky is endless, there's stars, more stars than you could ever even try to count. You know, it's just beautiful December night. It was during the holiday break. So it was a few days after Christmas. And so anyways, they park and Phoebe gets slipped in. And it's Aerosmith Big Ones. And there's some heavy making out going on. Yeah. Yeah. And passenger front seat, middling to, like, the console, you know, heavy making out going on. And there's this, like, moment where it just stops and it's like all, no, no, no. Freaking Steve Tyler's, like, singing his ass off, like, I was dying when I met you, you know, and so it's like total high school shit, and it's like, stop, moment, eye contact, are you ready, I don't know, are you ready, let's do this, because I'd almost gone all the way a few times with a couple guys, but it just didn't seem right, but at this particular moment, it was like, I guess it may have been Steve Tyler's voice. I don't fucking know, because, you know, that guy, you know, fucking he gets down. It's compassionate shit. So anywho.
He just ooze sensuality and sexuality, like,
yeah,
in his lips and pores. He does.
Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, so, like, there's the eye moment, like, oh, are we going to do this? And it was like, okay, let's do this. And, you know, undressing, naked, freaking stumbling with the condom, very, like, you know, clumsy because it wasn't something that was completely familiar to either one of us. Getting it on, you know, and it was in the front seat, the driver's seat of the Monte Carlo SS Q Top 85, black, freaking with the red pinstripe on the side. Listen to Aerosmith. Man, it seems like it's totally not even in my, because that was, like, in the 90s, okay? Like, late 90s. So it was totally out of our genre, but we were doing it. A generation. And, yeah, and so that one thing led to another. I mean, it didn't hurt that bad. Like, I was nervous because I thought it would hurt, but he was actually very gentle and very precise and very respectful. And it was not bad at all. And I went back for more, and went back for more, and more, and more, and more, and more. Yep, I went back for a lot of more.
Nice.
We experimented a lot together, and we learned a lot from each other sexually. Like, during those 2 years, we did. And then we've split ways, and we've still remained really good friends, like best friends. And I was actually messaging him, like, 20 minutes ago, you know. So, like, we still have a really good connection. Yep.
That's fucking awesome.
So, that was it. Aerosmith.
So, I told my story in a book, and people can check that shit out. But I have another story that might be kind of fun to share, because your story made me remember this for some reason. And, there was, before the first time I had sex, there was the first time I tried to have sex, which is probably a much better story, and I'm not sure I want to tell it.
Okay, then maybe you should. Who did it? You're going to
tell
that story. Wait. All right, I got to get that out. I got to listen to some freaking Aerosmith now. Okay. Loving it in Africa.
Yeah, it's entirely. I don't know. So what do you think? Should I tell a story of where the first time I tried to have sex, my failed attempt at lovemaking, at like
your
15 years old or whatever?
Attempt.
Yeah. What do you think? Should I save that for another show? Should we ask? Should we see if any listeners?
I have some failed attempts as well.
Did you?
The first
time. Not the only one.
The first time I was fingered.
Okay.
I could have went to something else, but it didn't. How I saved myself. Well, I'm the Virgin Mary, all right? I just got to say that.
Right.
I just totally. Yeah. No, I have 4 kids. They were all immaculately conceived.
Awesome. Yeah, we're all virgins here on Occupy Underground Radio. Failed attempts only. No, this girl was no help. I'm going to blame it on her. No, and my ineptitude too, probably. We're both to blame. Ta-da, ta-da.
Yeah, it does take two to tango, or not to tango.
It's great, yeah. And she was daft in that area. It was totally like she was the one that wanted to go do it. Enough so that we were like out in the trees in the forest, you know, we'd taken the dogs for a walk, and she wanted to have a go at it right there. And she just kind of like, I don't know, she wanted to be on top, first of all. And she had like an extreme aversion to any type of oral sex or playing with the genitalia at all. She just wanted to like have like straight sex, nothing, you know. She didn't want me to touch her or anything down there. And then she just like straddles on top of me, and you know, and that's it. Like she's waiting for me to like put it in and pull her down. And it was I don't know, Aaron. It was an epic failure.
Hey.
What's that noise?
Come here. There's a stray dog running down the street. Like, there's a stray dog that just got loose from somebody's house running down the street. I'm trying to, you know, I'm in the market for a new puppy, so if it came over here, it may have happened, but I guess it wasn't going to be.
No, dog's running from me.
No, it doesn't come here like, you know, I go, then it's not my dog. And I'm like, all right, that's one on your adventure, Bindi. You'll find your way home one day, freaking home away from home. You're on an adventure, I know it. You'll be good.
So we lost Gigi there, and since we're at the after part of the show, she can't call back, but she says to, you know, she says thanks for having me on it. And I want to thank her for coming on. Thank you, Gigi.
Thank you, Gigi.
And what we do need to firm up then is we need to get all of them. We need the entire 2013 applications for his plan to Jessica Helm Lopez, Zachary Klugman, Gigi Bella there, and then, crap, what the hell is David Plassman?
I don't know.
I'm going to look, because we're on the radio. I can't just leave it like that.
I know, so keep on holding.
Maile. David Maile. 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 That's where you fight hand to hand.
Yeah, because he's Pacific Islander, right?
Right.
Yeah.
David Maile.
Well, I remember that name was a Pacific Islander.
That's not how you pronounce it, right?
It's probably like Molly or Molly.
Molly, that's it,
or,
David Molly.
Yeah. Okay, all right, we got your name right. Did it come on our show?
That's right, we're going to get the four of them and kick it without pre-planting. Because those guys are awesome, you know, and it's like, I'm going to be honest here. When I first heard of, like the concept of slam poetry was kind of, it was new to me, you know, obviously, when I first came across it, it was new to me. That was daft, wasn't it? Did you hear what I just said? Okay, so anyway.
Yeah,
dabbling. When I first come across
it, instead of dabbling, come dousing. So you immersed yourself completely because it was dousing. You weren't even like dribbling. I was dousing myself with it. Okay, got it.
Right. So I thought, I was like, okay, because art is supposed to be like an expression of self, and we're all going to be different. We're all going to express ourselves differently, and some people are going to connect with it, some people aren't. And then also our moods are going to fluctuate, and that's going to, you know, affect how we express ourselves in our art from mood to mood, and that's going to affect, you know, who connects with it and who doesn't. So it's like the concept of somebody like sitting there with scorecards and judging people, I was like, well, how can this person be an adequate judge? You know, how can any like small group of people be an adequate judge? That was my initial thought. I was like, well, this is art. Why are you judging it? But it's like I see now the structure of it, the camaraderie, the companionship, the way it forces you to think differently and work with people. These people, they pair up and write things together and perform together in duos and quadrets and trios, and it's ridiculously awesome and cool, you know. And yeah, I think get out of your fucking house, and go check out some go check out everything that you can, and one of those things should be some fucking slam poetry because it's cool and different.
It is cool.
All right,
Ben, are we gonna play some music? And I'm done with my after party for tonight. I got a lot of stuff going on. Manana next day and rest is important.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I got some more tracks from the Enchanted Circle bands that I'm gonna play. Some more Reviva and Mondo and Dan Gardino and BNN and all of that. So good night everybody, and thanks for listening. Mary just actually disconnected. I'm sure she intended to say good night and everything. So I'll say it for her on behalf of all of us at Occupy Underground Radio, episode 26. Fucking awesome. Thanks for listening. And, support your local art scene. Support local music, films, literature, small press. And here, right now, you're going to listen to some awesome fucking local bands from Albuquerque that are playing at the Enchanted Festival. Reviva, right now.